Thank you for the invitation to give this seminar. So I'll be telling you about this super fluid to normal phase transition in strongly correlated bosons. This is work that I've done in collaboration with my boss, Marcos Rigol, at Georgetown, and well, now at Penn State. Okay, so this is more or less the outline of the talk. It's just a little introduction about the motivations and why we studied and why they renewed interest in this problem, because actually this is like a relatively old problem. I will introduce the model that we studied and the phase diagram that we measured with quantum Monte Carlo. Then I will explain to you the determination of the phase diagram, so the techniques that we used. Then I'm going to provide an argument for the absence of bosons and condensation in confined interacting systems, which is important for the experimentalists working on the field of ultra-cold atoms, because they necessarily use like a sort of a confining potential to avoid the atoms to escape. Okay, and then finally, if I have time, I will discuss how to measure those phase diagrams in experiments with ultra-cold gas. Okay, and finally, I will conclude. Okay, that's more or less the outline. So why are we interested and why this, we have this renewed interest in this problem? Because of there are like experimental realizations for those systems, like low temperature experiments with superfluid helium, Josephson junction arrays. There's also magnetic insulators in which you can think of the excitations as bosonic, like magnons and that stuff. And recently with ultra-cold atoms trapped in optical lattices, where this superfluid to normal transition has been observed, like in those two experiments that I will briefly discuss. Okay, so those are the like relatively recent experiments they have considered. The first one in two dimensions, where they measure the temperature chemical potential phase diagram. So what they did was like for low temperature, they see a superfluid phase, and then they were able to measure the phase diagram as they increase temperature and change the chemical potential. And they did so by performing like a in situ measurement of the local density for those systems. And then they got this nice phase diagram. In 3D, they have done a little bit of a different experiment. They measure the phase diagram in the T U, where you use the interaction between the bosons. And what they measured was like, what they observed was the disappearance of the critical temperature as they approach the MOT insulator phase in this region, okay? So they have these very interesting measurements which they compare with the quantum Monte Carlo simulations, and they all match, and this is very nice. And that was, say, our main motivation to study this type of phase transition, okay? So the model that we studied is the in which this, we studied the superfluid to normal transition is a system of Harcourt bosons, which can be thought as the strongly interacting limit of the Bose-Havard model. When you have the interaction much larger than the kinetic energy, and in two and three dimensions, okay. And we did that. We computed the phase diagram as function of the chemical potential and temperature. Okay, so this is our Hamiltonian. It contains two terms. One is the usual kinetic energy, and the other term is like a chemical potential, which we made psi dependent. And this chemical potential, we contain the overall chemical potential plus some energy offset that we use to describe the confining potentials they use in the experiments. Okay. Those operators are hardcore, meaning that you cannot create two particles at the same site. That takes into account this like a fact that they are strongly interacting. And then one nice thing about this model is that it can be mapped to the extensively studied XY model in the spin language, if you want. Okay, so in that language, this kinetic energy is understood as a ferromagnetic exchange interaction, and the role of the chemical potential is like the one of the magnetic field in the spin language, okay, along the z direction. The phase diagram is this one, again as function of mu, chemical potential, and temperature, and it's very simple. It has two phases. It has a superfluid low temperature order or quasi order phase, okay, and a high temperature phase in which we have a normal fluid state, a disordered state. And the results from our quantum Monte Carlo simulations are this one for two dimensions, the in green. For 3D, we have this curve in blue, and then to more or less to have a feeling of the strength of the quantum and thermal fluctuations, we measure the mean field phase diagram, okay? And we clearly see that there is a big difference even with respect to 3D, where the mean field is expected to be more or less a good description of that system. But again, we see a large difference, okay? So that's one of our results. I mean, it's in arbitrary dimensions. We just normalize temperature by the dimensionality. So this mean field, it's in principle exact in infinite dimensions. So, but you can still use it in 3D or in 1D. When you do the calculation, the calculation is valid for any dimension. Okay, so.
So at zero temperature, there's no. The critical field is the same as no normalization of the critical field from the mean field at zero temperature?
No, because essentially those are free particles at the zero temperature. So everything is really simple, and the mean field is essentially exact. Okay. So, yeah. So I will explain now how we measure those phase diagrams, okay? So first, the mean field, very quickly. So we use the side decoupling of the kinetic energy term. So we wrote down this hopping or this kinetic energy term as in this way, and we introduced this sort of mean field, which is nothing but the superfluid order parameter, okay? And for a homogeneous system, this approximation leads to a very simple Hamiltonian, a single side Hamiltonian, from which you can compute essentially anything. So what we did was exactly that. We computed the partition function for that Hamiltonian, and from the partition function we computed an equation for the order parameter, from which we then, by solving this transcendental equation numerically, we computed that phase diagram that I was showing. Okay, so that's very simple mean field. Now for the 2D and 3D phase diagram, we use quantum Monte Carlo simulations.
Sure.
Not so far. So right now I'm considering the homogeneous system. Okay. Later, if I have time, I will explain how to measure the phase diagram in presence of the trap. Okay. Okay. So I was saying, we use quantum Monte Carlo simulations plus finite size scaling of several quantities. For instance, in 2D, in 3D, we can use the superfluid stiffness that we can measure in this type of simulations, and we based on the renormalization group equations, we can derive a finite size scaling relation for the superfluid stiffness in 2D. After some manipulations, you get this one. So it relates the superfluid stiffness at any temperature in the vicinity of the phase transition, the size of the system, and the critical temperature. Okay, so what we did was to derive this equation use this formula to compute the critical temperature in the following way. So the idea is that we have a prediction for this function f. Okay, it should be a straight line with negative slope of 4 divided by 3. And what we did was to plot this quantity times this denominator as function of this variable here that I call x. Okay, and then we had two free parameters. One is Tc and the other one is this L0, which should depend very little on temperature. Okay, and then we adjusted Tc and L0 essentially to get the best straight line that we could. Okay, and we got our best f is presented here, and it has like a those two things that I was saying. So at zero, it is like the function is 1, and the slope is negative, and it is very close to 4 divided by 3. Okay, there are other ways to use this data that we measure with quantum Monte Carlo, but this was the picture that allowed us to check most aspects of the BKT transition with what we had. Okay, so we verified this scaling relation. We also verified that the jump in the superfluid stiffness at Tc is 2 Tc divided by P, which was a prediction by Kosterlis in the 70s. And we did that by computing this quantity, this rescaled superfluid stiffness that should become system size independent at the critical temperature. And we plotted, okay? And we see like a nice crossing of those curves for different system sizes. And then the nice part about this calculation is that this line here, this dotted blue line, it corresponds to the straight line 2t divided by pi. So we verified the BKT scenario is consistent with our simulations. And then this is the data for mu equals 0, which was well studied before. And then we repeated the same procedure for different values of the chemical potential. And that's how we got this phase diagram, okay? So that's our procedure. I want to tell you that the BKT scenario was verified for all values of the chemical potential that we analyzed. So we believe that there's a BKT in all regions of the phase space, of the phase diagram. So that's for the two dimensions. In 3D, we did exactly the same. We measured the superfluid stiffness. In this case, the transition is in a different universality class. It's the 3D XY universality. And we had a different scaling relations, but they are all well known. So we just use them. And on top of that, we use the critical exponents from a very accurate calculation they did on a classical model that is in the same universality class. So we didn't worry about the critical exponents too much. We just used the ones from a very good determination on a classical model. Okay, and again, we measure superfluid stiffness. We found the best collapse, meaning that we determine this function f, and we got a very interesting crossing exactly as we did in 2D. That's the result for Tc, for the zero chemical potential. And then again, we repeat the calculation for all different values of the chemical potential, and that's how we measure that blue curve. Okay. In 3D, it's interesting because this transition is accompanied by the formation of a condensate. Okay, so you can also use the condensate fraction to measure that transition, and that's what we did. We asked the question like, how many particles are populating the zero momentum, and we divided by the number of bosons that we had in our simulations. And we found also finite size scaling relations for the condensate fraction, and we did exactly the same as we did with the superfluid stiffness. And the results coming from the condensate fraction and the superfluid stiffness are in good agreement, at least within the error of our numerics. Okay, that's like what concerns the determination of the phase diagram. Okay, so now I want to tell you a little bit about the behavior of the zero momentum occupation. So we got interested in understanding the zero momentum occupation because that's what they can measure in experiments with cold gases. Okay, so we ask like, can we obtain information about criticality using the zero momentum occupation? And I'm going to try to convince you that the derivative of the zero momentum occupation with respect to temperature contains useful information about the transition in 1, 2, and 3 dimensions. Okay, and that quantity can be used to determine critical temperature. Okay, so this is the behavior of the zero momentum occupation as you approach the critical temperature from the disordered phase. As you approach TC, then this quantity, like a lot of particles start populating those zero momentum modes, and the population diverges, okay, in one, two, and three dimensions. Okay, well, in 1D there's no transition, but if you go to T equals 0, then you see that. And then the derivative of that quantity, it also diverges. It goes to minus infinity. And that's as far as an infinite system is concerned. But if we think about the same problem for a finite system, what happens is that the zero momentum occupation starts growing, but then it has to saturate to its zero temperature value, which is finite in a finite system, okay? And what happens is that the derivative has like a large peak, okay? And the peak, the position of the peak, T star, that we call T star, is related to Tc. So it's gonna be T star equals to Tc plus some size corrections, which will depend on the universality class of the transition, okay? And the height of the peak will diverge with the size of the system, and the precise way in which the peak diverges depends also on the universality class. Okay, so we wanted to use that to determine Tc. So that's exactly what we did. We more or less tried to understand what was the way in which this quantity diverged. For instance, in 2D, it diverges with this power as function of the correlation length, okay? And the derivative with respect to T diverges also, it goes to minus infinity with the correlation length, and you have some like logarithmic corrections to it. And the position of the peak for a finite system, it's, again, we found that it was related to Tc plus some logarithmic corrections, okay? Which we can use now to analyze our data. And the height of the peak is this one for a finite system, or that's the scaling relation. And then we did like the actual simulation. So we measured the zero momentum occupation, and which is this one here, for different system sizes, okay? And we also measured the temperature derivative. And we saw that there was this divergence with system size. So you see that as we increase system size, you see this peak growing and growing, okay? And then using this data, we tested first this scaling as the peak of this quantity as function of the size of the system. And then we fit our data to that scaling form, and we see like it makes sense like with respect to what we see in the simulation. And then from the position of the peak, which moves as we change temperature, as we change the system size, by using this this relation, we were able to extrapolate T star to the thermodynamic limit using this relation. And you see that when you plot T star versus 1/2 the log square, we see more or less like we see a straight line. okay, which we use to extrapolate the critical temperature, which is this value. And then we compared it with the superfluid stiffness, which is not in perfect agreement, but they are consistent, very close. And on top of that, we have a larger error here. So we believe what we see is actually a signature of the phase transition. Okay. That's for the two-dimensional system. For the three-dimensional system, we can do the same thing. Everything is a little bit different because we have a different universality, but again, we see divergence in the derivative, which relates to the critical exponents of the transition. And we have different scaling relations for T star, for the position of the peak. But essentially, the picture is the same. You have a large peak in the derivative, and the scaling of that peak is this one. So we took the log of the height of the peak and we computed this the slope essentially of this straight line, and the combination of critical exponents is like in agreement with the classical exponents that we that were computed in a very accurate way in a classical model. Okay. We also, using this relation and our numerical data, we extracted the critical temperature by extrapolating T star versus this variable here, and we got also a straight line, and so we were able to compute also TC from that quantity, and that TC is in agreement with the TC that we found with the superfluid stiffness. Okay, so this is nice because the experimentalists can measure the momentum distribution and the zero momentum equation. So we're confident they can at least use this quantity. And then another interesting fact about this measurement is that you can use it in 2D and in 3D too. And in 2D especially is very important, or we believe it's at least interesting, because in 2D there's no condensation, okay? So even though they cannot measure a condensate fraction, they can use this quantity to determine the critical temperature, okay? So that's more or less what I wanted to tell you about the homogeneous system. Now I want to tell you a little bit about the inhomogeneous system, and the inhomogeneity is induced by the strapping potential that they use in those experiments. So I want to discuss a little bit what happens when you have those confining potentials. Okay. So trapped systems. Okay, so the first thing that I want to discuss is the possibility to have Bose-Einstein condensation in interacting 2D systems, okay, in presence of the confining potential. So, okay, so I'm going to just explain a little facts and then like to motivate our interest in this problem. So the first fact is that in a homogeneous system, thermal fluctuations destroy order at finite temperatures in 2D. This is like a very well-known theorem by Hohenberg and Merming Wagner. So there are no, there's no BEC Bose-Einstein condensation in 2D, in a homogeneous system, okay? Either with interactions, without interactions. So this is like a theorem, and that's how it is. So there's no BEC in homogeneous, non-interacting and interacting bosons. That's the first observation. There's a second observation that I wanted to make, and it is that harmonically confined non-interacting bosons undergo BEC at finite temperature, okay? In presence of this like harmonic confining potential. So that's just a fact. You do a calculation, it's very simple because they are non-interacting and you see that there is BEC, okay? So now our question was, what happens if we have the trapping potential and interactions? So is there condensation or not? That was actually the very first, the initial motivation we had for all those calculations, but it seems like at the end, we found a way to understand this, like this problem or the solution to this problem analytically, okay? So I'm going to try to explain to you what we did, like how this argument. So Bose-Einstein condensation occurs if the condensate fraction remains finite after after you take an appropriate thermodynamic limit. This was like a criterion that was introduced in, by Penrose and Onsager, beautiful paper. So that's essentially what we have to, what we would have to compute, the condensate fraction, and take the thermodynamic limit and see what happens with the with this condensate fraction, okay? But interestingly, in that paper, they also introduced an equivalent criterion for BEC, okay? So they defined this quantity A1, which we also derived for the Bose-Haber model, and it is this one. And it is based on the essentially the one body density matrix. So what they do is you what you do is you take the absolute value of the one body density matrix and you sum all of all elements, and that gives you a quantity A1, which remains finite in the thermodynamic limit only if there is condensation. Okay, but there is a condition for those two quantities to be equivalent, and it is the fact that the density rho ii, so when I is equal to j, it has to be finite everywhere in the system. Like that's the condition for the for A1 to be equivalent to be able to use it as a as a measurement of the condensation, okay? And that's the criterion. And then we did this comparison. This quantity looks very much to the fraction of particles in the K0 state, which is this quantity. So you take all elements and then you sum them. So the only difference is the absolute value, okay? That's the only difference. So if a system has positive elements for the one body density matrix, then the zero momentum occupation or the fraction of particles in the zero momentum occupation should be also macroscopically populated, okay? So the question was, can we use this quantity A1 to understand if BEC occurs for trapped bosons described by the Bose-Haber model? So we want to use this quantity, essentially this A1. And our argument is as follows. So first, we assume that there's no divergence in the density. This rho ii, it is finite. For the hardcore bosons, this is rigorous, okay? Because you cannot put more than one hardcore bosons per side. So this is exact for the hardcore when you have hardcore bosons, but it is also a pretty good assumption when you have interactions, because so long as you start putting interactions at the same side, then the interaction is going to be huge and the energy is going to diverge essentially if you start putting an infinite number. So we think that so long as you have interactions, this is a very good assumption. So there's no divergence in the density, which means that using A1 as for us to test BEC is feasible, okay? It's something that we can do. And then in thermal equilibrium, rho ij is positive for the Bose-Haber model. So not in general, but when we are at thermal equilibrium, rho ij is positive. So A1, which is the criterion introduced in this paper, and the fraction of particles in the zero momentum state are related. They are the same, okay? And the conclusion is that there is no BEC in interacting 2D inhomogeneous system because this fraction should be zero because of the Mermin-Wagner theorem. So we were able to conclude that there is no condensation into the entrapped system somehow once you take the thermodynamic limit. And finally, like as I said, the non-interacting particles they do condense. So we, the weak link of the argument for non-interacting is that for the non-interacting particles, the density diverges, okay, at the center of the trap. So this this criterion is not useful, okay? So that's the way we somehow understood that there's no condensation in trapped systems. And there's also a consequence that is interesting, and it is the fact that condensation to a generic state in those in the Bose-Haber model, it is always connected to condensation to the macroscopic population of the k equals to zero momentum.
How strong is the on-site U interaction in those experiments?
They can go from zero, from no interaction, to the hardcore. Yeah, they can tune the interaction with the flashback resonance, so they can go to really high values of U. Okay.
So which values of U do they see the condensation transition
I don't, I mean, I don't think they have studied condensation as function of U, not that I know. So on top of that, it's, for them it's hard because they have to start opening the trap to take the like a thermodynamic limit. So it is difficult like for them to know. So, and what they use so far is the zero momentum occupation. So they cannot access directly the condensate fraction, because it's, I mean, there's no measurement to do that. Yeah. But in any case, this this last this last part is interesting for them, because they, for the, at least for the Bose-Haber, they can safely use the zero momentum occupation to test condensation. Because so even though there's no explicit connection between the condensate fraction and the zero momentum, you can still use the zero momentum population to test if they have condensation or not. So that's what we claimed. Okay.
So this property that Will and James model is only valid for the Bose-Haber model. How generic?
Okay, in general it's not true, but for the Bose-Haber model we did it rigorously. So there are two arguments that I know. One is through the way this quantity is measured in the stochastic series expansion, and you when you do the representation of this quantity in this series expansion, you see that it is like an infinite sum of strictly positive terms. So at least for the Bose-Haber model, we know this is rigorously. But in general, it's not. I mean, it's not easy to say something like for fermions, for instance. In general, it's not going to be positive. Probably if you have some trivial, I mean, not trivial, but non-frustrating hopping terms, you still have, you're confident more or less that you get still a positive rho ij. Okay, so I think I have time to tell you a little bit about criticality. So how to measure criticality in presence of the confining potential. So what we do, or our idea was to use the same idea, like based on the derivative with respect to temperature or beta. We, in this case, with the trap, we use beta, the inverse temperature, and we measure the same quantity, essentially the momentum distribution and its derivative with respect to beta. And when we see, what we see is like a maximum instead of a minimum, then if you do it with respect to t, you see the minimum, this peak, which is now rounded because of the effect of the strapping potential. But in any case, we see the signature, so we can use the same idea that we had for the homogeneous system to measure criticality in presence of that confining potential. There are previously proposed approaches. One is based on the local compressibility. So they can measure the in situ density, and they can also measure the fluctuations of the density, okay? And they relate those fluctuations of the density across the system with the phase transition as function of the some like effective local chemical potential. Because the trap can be thought as like a specially varying chemical potential, okay? So that's what some other proposals. So one is based on the local compressibility that they can measure, introduced in this paper. There's another one in which they do an analysis of the shape of the full momentum distribution. So this is like a particularly aimed for the 3D XY universality class, but it's very good. So this is somehow more generic because it can be used in several models. This one's particularly designed for the 3D XY. And what they did was to define the quantity that exhibits that they expected exhibits a minimum at the critical temperature. Okay, it's this quantity Q, which we measured, and we saw a minimum. It's a little bit broad, but we saw that minimum. And then we went ahead and measured the phase diagram based on a simulation with the trap, with the confining potential, and then we compared it with the homogeneous phase diagram that we determined with the quantum, with those previous techniques, with an accurate finite size scaling. And this is, for instance, in 2D, we measured that phase diagram. So this green is the homogeneous one that I presented before, and these red dots are our technique based on the derivative in presence of the confining potential. So it is like a relatively good, like we see a good agreement. For the local compressibility, the method is very good for low values of the chemical potential. But then when you are close to the tip of the lobe, then the method is not that accurate. And this is because when you are around here, there are strong fluctuations, and this idea of the local density approximation or these local fluctuations, they deviate a lot from the actual critical behavior. Okay, so that's in 2D. In 3D, we tried also our method, but we see a really strong size effects in 3D. Also, probably because we can make like this linear size of the system that we can simulate in 3D is much smaller. Okay, so. So we were not so successful here. What we see though is that as we open the trap, we see that the critical values or the critical temperatures approach, they move in the right direction. So we're confident, or we think that if we could do larger and larger 3D systems, then we would eventually converge to the, at least it seems like it goes in the right direction. Then we also used this method, using this quantity Q, and in that case the method performs really like well, and then you understand that because the method is essentially tailored for that particular transition, so that's why I believe that's the reason why they have such a good accuracy in the determination of the phase diagram. Okay. I think this is more or less it. So these are my conclusions. So we determine the finite temperature phase diagram of bosons in the hardcore limit in 2 and 3D. This is an old problem, but most people just concentrate it at the tip of the lobe. So most simulations were dealing only with this point, okay, in 2 and 3D, and we just did the whole thing. Like someone had to do it, I believe. Even though the problem is very simple, but we did it. We understood how measurements of the derivative of the zero momentum together with finite size scaling relations can be used to determine critical temperatures. So as far as I know, I mean, the behavior of the quantity itself was understood, but it was never used to determine TC. So that's our one of the things that we like about it. And this last approach based on those derivatives can be used also for trapped systems. So in principle, this is useful information for experimentalists too. We also provided an argument against the possibility to have DEC for interacting trapped systems. That we believe it's an interesting argument, and we hope it is exact, and we think it's nice too. And we also tested this approach, and it can be extended to trapped systems. Probably I said that already, but yeah. The beautiful part of what we think is nice is that it's independent of the dimensionality and universality class. So yeah, that concludes my presentation. Okay.
Yeah, that one. The peak on the left is extremely sharp. Are you sure you're not missing any of the peak rates for the largest systems, like 64?
We did really a lot of simulations in
so
this.
Even though it jumps so far.
It jumps so far, but we did a very fine grid of simulations. And it was tough because as like when you're doing that, you also have to start increasing your statistics.
Can you just multi histogram?
I didn't try that, but we could try that. But we didn't try. We just increased the statistics like naively, if you want. But it worked. We located that position, and it still follows this trend, this straight line. So we think it's. We think we're doing the simulation in the right way.
For the trapped system, and I wonder, you know, there's one way to define phase transition is to consider the free energy, how free energy depends on temperature, whether there's singularity or not in the Laplacian limit.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether for a trapped system, if a particle number is large, whether free energy as function of temperature may have some singular point.
I think it does.
So then one can use that to say yes, there is a condensation.
I think that you can do this. The size scaling, it's a little bit trickier because you have to consider
exactly. When you're training the particle number, there's also issue about do you want to train the trapping potential.
So I think
certainly there's a particular way to describe how n goes to infinity.
Right, right.
But you have such a way, then you can try to see whether free energy have a singularity or not.
That's exactly like how I put a very vague phrase in one of my slides, which is this appropriate thermodynamic limit. And it is related to that. So how do you add particles while you open the trap?
Yeah.
And I think you have to you have to be very careful about on the way you do that.
So just follow up on Michelle's question, is it possible to do some sort of like tempering simulations when you have these correlators that are opening the worm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it possible to define some sort of broad histogram sampling when you're measuring a special correlation function? I've never seen anything.
I have never seen that before. I suppose it is possible, but I haven't tried or thought about it. But I believe, yeah. But if we can do that.
Other questions for Juan? If not, I think he's here till basically supper time or the end of the day. So
yeah.
You can run into him in my office. So let's thank him again.
Thank you.